Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends. Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Here's another Friday, the 14th of February, 2025. With me again, none other than my brother, Lungani. Hi, brother.
Hey, how are you?
How's it going?
It's going, bro. It's going.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah.
You've had a good, we had a good week?
Oh, yeah. We survived another week. But that's the thing. I don't know. It's like, you know how it is. You know, many of us, we look forward to Friday because,
yes.
You know, I mean, for us who are believers, I mean, tomorrow is, you know, we'll be going to church, you know, Sabbath and stuff. So I think it's something to look forward to. That's, you know, so, but then we have to make sure that our mental health is also kind of on point, right?
Speaking of mental health, how's your mental health?
No one has ever asked me, how's my mental health, man?
Yes.
This is the thing. I think my mental health is up and down.
Because it's very, very important to know that you're really functioning well.
Yeah, but that's the
thing.
You're
firing on all cylinders, bro.
But that's the thing. I think sometimes it's like, as much as I wish I could say I am doing great pertaining to my mental health, I just think, you know, mental health is one of those things where it's up and down. I know for me, it's up and down. I had a conversation with a good brother on Tuesday, Franz Vaughn. Franz Vaughn is like a prolific musician and one of those great artists. And we have a section on the Trims and Talk podcast where we ask our guest, what's your thing? And usually that segment is for them to talk about the thing that they do to make sure that their mental health is like in top shape. You know, the things we do, some people go gardening and some people go for walks or some people, you know, actually a good meal kind of does them right. It's pertaining to their mental health. He said to me, he's like, he was like, he told us, he was like, you know what? My mental health hasn't been that great of late. You know, he's talking about anxiety, you know, and all that kind of stuff, which is sometimes, you know, and it was like, it was refreshing to hear somebody saying that, you know, talking about how they are doing their mental health, you know, and being truthful about what it is that they are going through. Because sometimes it's like when somebody asks you, how are you doing? How is your mental health? We usually say, I'm fine. You know what I'm saying? We cover up. Because then it stops us from having to explain to the other person how we are doing. And especially us as men, we're guilty of this. You know what I'm saying? And so,
guilty. Listen, when you talk about being guilty, I think you're not alone.
There's it, bro.
And our dear listeners, just to let you know, this is African Voices platform. We all know we're people of African descent.
That's it.
We have a lot to learn.
That's it, bro.
But no one is going to teach us these things.
No one.
It's going to come from us. Yeah?
That's it.
So if I turn around and said, if I ask you, how's your mental health? It can be a tricky question. It's a very intrusive question.
It is a very intrusive question, bro.
Very, very intrusive.
It is.
Okay. So sometimes it's really, really important, to just sometimes understand that I'm not being intrusive in your life.
No, but that's the thing. It's like, I just think because as humankind, I won't say as men, I think sometimes we are very guarded pertaining to what it is that we go out. I think, like the word you used, like masking. We mask a lot. I remember actually this young lady, I remember watching this clip, and this first time I actually heard this term masking. And she was talking about her experience of being in a lineage of pastors. Mm. So she moves from home, in the continent. And she moves over to here, to the West. And she has to constantly mask because she's like, she has to show a version that, a sanitized version of who she is. Mm. Because she knows that if she doesn't do that, a report will get home. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's like we are here like thousands of miles away from home. But whatever it is that we do here, somehow the report usually gets home. And then you suddenly find out that people know your business, then you actually know your business.
Absolutely.
And I guess that's why, when you ask somebody, how's your mental health? Mm. They are not quick to be very, very, kind of truthful about how they are doing or how they are feeling.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So how is your mental health, though?
I would say it's been up and down.
Up and down.
Up and down. I wouldn't even want to. People tend to want to measure on a scale of da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
How would you rate your mental health? 1 to 10. How do you rate your mental
health? How do you rate your mental health?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the worst possible scale of measurement.
Is it?
You can ever ask somebody, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? How's your day?
How's your day? Hey, that's the thing. That's the thing on a scale of 1 to 10. Because, you see, me, I measure my day from when I wake up in the morning, which is usually before 5. And then I will go and park my car outside my gym and then go for a run. Because I know if I don't go for that run, I'm going to struggle. Because the run somehow is my way of saying, I am going to run away from whatever comes my way.
Oh, yes.
No, it's like, I don't know if you ever done this, but sometimes you get there, you're running on the road, and it's as if you are running away from every situation and circumstances that you know is currently at the back of your mind. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So when I go out there to run, it's also to clear my head of just stuff, because I have that mind, that brain that doesn't really, kind of quieten down.
Always.
Yes, always churning, when we are all on the spectrum.
Of course.
I am not in any way, kind of unique in any way. We are all on the spectrum. I mean, some people will have ADHD or whatever, Asperger's and stuff. But I find that my mind never quietens down. So sometimes the only way to quieten my mind is to do that repetitive thing that somehow dulls the mind. And you know what I mean? Like running. Running, sometimes I'll concentrate on my feet. Just doing that thing. Or especially here, considering how cold it is.
Mm.
Sometimes you are running fast so that you can warm your hands. So your concentration is on your hands.
It's very cold.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's crazy cold. This country is crazy cold, bro. And you can understand why many of us, we come over to this part of the world and somehow our mind breaks. You know,
right,
because we are dealing with stuff that is not normal for us. No matter how long you've been here in this part of the world, sometimes it's like things just come that just derail you and they make you wish you were back home. Even
100%.
Even though you know.
100%.
Home is no longer home.
No.
You know. So, in your case, how do you... Because I'm sure you're one of those people who go home every so often.
Yeah. Do you know, I used to think that there's this, you know, they tend to call it something hanging on your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Shake it off.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, when you get there, you either double up or the amount of stress you have. Or you have that opportunity to meet with people that will actually make it easier for you.
That's it.
Basically, it's on the balance.
Mm-hmm.
You might just get yourself there, find lots of issues and problems which are going out to knock you off your rails.
That's it.
Okay? And trying to get back is another hustle, bro.
It is a hustle.
You know, and when you think, sometimes I hear people say, oh, I need a rest. I need to go back. I need to go back and rest.
Yeah.
Bro, 3 days in, you're looking at return tickets.
Dude, let me tell you something.
Yeah?
I was home in May. I went to Zimbabwe in May. Mm. And I think I was 4 days in. 4 days in, I was thinking of coming back.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes it's that thing, I won't say it's a confusion, but it's that whole thing of, because it's like, the moment we left home, somehow there was a shift in terms of what home is.
Mm.
You know, like last week we were talking about my niece who carries home with her.
She walks home with her.
Yeah, she carries home with her. And that concept, you know, of but then when you are at ground zero, because ground zero is where we were born, it's when suddenly the confusion, because one, you are looking at the way things are and you're thinking, is there something I can do to kind of level up in terms of kind of the standard of living there so that it mirrors the life I am now accustomed to here in the West? And sometimes that sense of guilt, because I know sometimes I remember a time talking to my brother. My brother says, "Hey, you should come home and struggle with us." You see what I'm saying? So it's those kind of things. Sometimes it's like you're made to feel guilty for having moved.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
The thing is, I mean, there's various different generations. You see,
mm-hmm.
if we flip back and look at the Windrush generation.
Yeah.
Maybe it's different. But when you look at the generation that came after, or the offspring of the Windrush, they don't have that. Maybe they do.
Mm.
But based on the people that I've spoken to who come from the generation, they'll tell you, really, I've never been. I don't know the place. So I don't miss anything. And when they go for the first time, it's like a revelation.
Mm. No, it is a revelation, bro.
It's like a revelation. So what they've... Sometimes they say it's better not knowing. In some situations. When they get to know something, it's like a revelation, you know. They start now to enjoy it even more. They start going more often. But because of the attachment is not so strong...
Yeah.
As the parents or grandparents.
That's it.
You know. So it becomes really less of a stress, really, you know, less of a hustle.
Mm.
But if you think about the current state of mental health awareness within the African communities or people of African descent. I mean, are there any significant changes or improvements you've observed in recent years?
You know what? I know in terms of statistics, I remember David Boustou, you know, from SACMA, you know, the CEO of SACMA, saying that I think about 30 years ago, it was six times more likely for a black man to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act.
Yes.
That was about 30 years ago. Mm. Now it's five times more likely.
30, so, come on now.
No, for real.
So 30 years later.
30 years later, we are
it's
only
just moved down 1%.
1%. Now we are five times more likely.
So really, we haven't moved any.
So we haven't really moved as much. I think as much as we are now aware of mental health services and we are holding a lot of services to task, we are still more likely to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act, you know, as people of color.
And is that because of a lack, I wouldn't want to call it a lack of knowledge from the professionals, but is it an environmental lack of understanding of us as a people?
I think. I mean, these are my own kind of observations, and I think if you look at it, we are, as much as we call this home, even those before us will say that the services here were never made with us in mind. So we were never made to feel at home as much as it is home. And some people rightly so, because they were born here. Mm. And they're probably third or fourth generation of those who were born here. Because you're talking people coming here in 1948. Well, the well-documented one, 1948. But really, to be honest, the Africans have been in this part of the world, you know, for a long while, because we were travelers before.
Sheffield, I'll give you one start. You'll be shocked. First African man who was, who was on business to Sheffield sometime around 1778.
See what I mean?
From Guinea, West Africa. In Sheffield.
In Sheffield.
1778. He wasn't a slave.
Yeah.
He was just a businessman. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you go to parts in Liverpool.
Yeah.
Traders from Sierra Leone. Sailors from Somalia. Mm-hmm. Fishermen. Yeah. They used to go dock, sail back to West Africa, sail back to East Africa, come back on business, buy and sell, you know.
Buy and sell, goods. Yeah.
And you're thinking, they had this passage. I think in Sheffield, freedom of Somali started coming here in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know.
But that's what I'm saying, you know. We were never strangers to the wider world.
No.
But I think in our travels, that's when we are attracted. Because this is the thing. Wherever we go, people will notice. And how we, the same word we used last time, how we present to the wider world.
Yeah.
Literally, how we present to the wider world is either noticed or envied. You know what I'm saying? I think, unfortunately, as a community of people, we have attracted, you know, attention, sometimes some good and some
bad.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Some terrible, because the way we carry ourselves as a people sometimes, especially against these odds that are so much against us as human beings, people, it sort of kind of dumbfounds a lot of people, you know, because they're saying, how do these people still carry themselves with a modicum of grace,
dignity,
and dignity? Against so many odds. How do we do that? Why are we so resilient as a people? You know what I'm saying? Because then that makes you question, you know, how you are viewed. You know what I'm saying? Because people are always curious. Dark. We are dark in terms of kind of our complexion. We are just different. We smile even at the most atrocious of things being done to us. And sometimes it seems like we are oblivious to everything that's happening around us. And we carry on. And we move on. And we try and make a change wherever we find ourselves. Look at here, especially here in this part of the world, in England, what we have done. I mean, the NHS wouldn't be what it is if it wasn't for us.
Not at all.
I spoke to a lady from Birmingham who started, you know, one of the first mental health, you know, kind of infrastructure within Birmingham. And she's a sister from the Caribbean. You see what I'm saying? So we have contributed to this part of the world from England to the States to, and yet.
We contributed even prehistorical.
That's what I'm saying.
Times.
Yeah, but we have never been acknowledged, fully acknowledged. You see what I mean?
There's only some small pockets of acknowledgement here and there.
But that's the thing. It's like our acknowledgement is so minuscule that sometimes it makes you wonder whether you have a place in this world. And now we come back and many of us become sick under that pressure of knowing that regardless what we do, we will always be marginalized. We will always be viewed as the other. No matter how much we love the people around us. When the people around us face a little modicum of discomfort, we are the first one to receive, to bear the brunt.
Yes.
To bear the brunt of that kind of, you know, kind of treatment. And sometimes, and we, despite that, we carry on. 100%. We hold on. And then some of us break.
Yeah.
And I guess our conversation really is about how do we deal with that kind of pressure and maintain and not break.
The thing is, if we look at the cultural perceptions, you know, and the influence of mental health in African diaspora communities, do you reckon there are there any common misconceptions that you believe need to be addressed? Because I'm not going to look at you walking down the street and immediately tell that you're doing fine, man. You know, look at him, he's doing so well. I don't know that. But that's me being, having that perception of you being okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that takes us back to what we started on saying, how's your mental health? Yeah.
This is the thing, bro. We have a thing that we do at SACMA. I mean, like, for those who don't know, I work for Sheffield African Caribbean Mental Health Association. And this is the first time, actually, I have worked for the church before. You know, like our church, you know. For the first time in my life, I worked for a predominantly, this is a predominantly black or, well, so-called black organization, even though that is a very loose term, because I'm a believer that if you have one person of color in your
organization,
it's not a black organization. You see what I'm saying?
Tokenism?
But that's what I'm saying. I think in terms of organization, they are neither black nor white. I think organizations are just organizations.
The objectives of the organization should be the ethos.
Yes.
That the organization is.
But the ethos doesn't determine what how then if you could add color to the the organization. You see what I'm saying? So to my point, I remember when one sister came to work with us. Michaela, this is the first time I had somebody coming and speaking to me and asking how I'm doing. No, there were some. I mean, I've got people like Shelley Samuels, Corinne Moss, and the other sisters, you know, Sonia, who will sit down and ask you how you are doing. You see what I'm saying? You know, like when a sister looks directly at your face when they're asking you, how you are doing, and you can't dodge it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know how it is, you know, like you can't say, oh, I'm cool, and then duck away. Because they hold your attention somehow as if it's against your will. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, to your point, when you hold somebody's attention, you hold them so that they don't move. You see what I'm saying? That's how you then, you then when you ask them, how are they doing? And you look directly at them and say, how are you doing? Let me tell you, something happened to me when I was at church like a few weeks ago. There's a sister, Sister Reed. You know, one of the two elders, they're like elders at the back. I was standing at the door at the end of the church service. And she said to me, you know, like we do that whole shaking of hands and stuff as we are moving out. She asked me, hey, Lou, how are you? I did that whole thing that you do. I like to kind of keep it moving, innit? I said, oh, yeah, I'm okay. She turned and looked at me and said, how are you? Dude. I left that space where I was standing and burst into tears, bro. And let me tell you, that became like, it's like, let me tell you, anything we do, we leave unchecked, has a way of manifesting itself at the most inopportune and inconvenient of time. And let me tell you, and there have been sisters who will just come into my space and within the same environment, and they see me. You see what I'm saying? Because they don't look at you like, I'm just looking at you now. Even I see you, bro.
Acknowledge.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I acknowledge
absolutely
that you are there. And for me, when somebody looks at you and asks you a question, there's a tone that probes you and that actually compels you to act. And so when you actually, and sometimes we resonate with certain, there are certain, I don't know anything about how we are where we are as humankind, but there are some people who basically can get into your space and they just, I don't know whether it's something in their tone or is something in their look that they will ask you something and you just melt and you find yourself literally kind of reverting to when you was a little boy.
Yes.
You know, because there are some sisters who still hold me like that, you know, within my work,
yeah,
within
those circles.
Within the circles, you know, who basically can ask me, how are you doing? You know, the way you, when somebody, you know, actually is like, I think as humankind, we have that ability to do that to each other, to ask each other.
Do you think there is that deep connection, obviously?
I think we are connected, bro.
We are connected, but there's that genuine sense.
Yeah, there's a, yeah, that's right.
Okay?
Yeah.
The genuine sense of connection.
Yeah.
I come to you, you come to me. You talk to me, I speak to you.
That's it. No, you talk to me and I hear you, bro. You see what I'm saying? It's one thing for me. I can answer you and still not listen to you. Because there are certain things that, there are words in our conversations that are said, but there's certain nuances within that that requires us to listen deeper. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you can say good morning. And I can say, oh, yeah, good morning. But then sometimes it's like, it makes you stop and think, is it a good morning?
Is it really?
Is it really? You know what I mean?
But again, you know,
yeah,
we talk about, you know, we hear people talk about stigma. When I heard someone talk about, sometimes people talk about sensitive issues.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they've just read a textbook
or
they've just read a newspaper. Okay. When it comes to stigma surrounding mental health, which can be pervasive, serious, you know, perversion of that feeling that we as a people, I mean, in your experience, what what would you say that the main barriers that prevent us from seeking help?
From seeking help. Shame.
Or even how can we work to dismantle?
Shame, bro.
You know, the stigma in our societies.
Shame.
Hold on to that shame issue. I have a problem with that.
Mm.
If you want to put it in a wider understand, shame, we know what shame is.
Yes.
Okay?
We do.
You're not a leper, okay?
Yeah.
You're not someone who's, an outcast.
Yeah.
So shame about your health or shame about your well-being as an African man, okay? What makes you ashamed?
Bro,
to feel like I just want to know that Lou is good, Lou is positive, there's a lot of energy coming out of Lou, yeah? And then I'm expecting him to be okay.
Remember, some of us, we are the first of our families to come to this part of the world. Some of us, we are probably
but
the only
hold
ones.
Hold on to the family background, yeah. Okay? We want to know, where does that shame come from? Irrespective of where you came from, I just want to see us in this environment.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
I was doing that in a roundabout way.
Okay.
Okay. So, from experience, why I know for me personally why I didn't seek help. I grew up in the church. You see what I'm saying? I grew up within the church, and sometimes our measure of our Christianity is how self-sufficient we are. You see what I'm saying? Because I wake up in the morning and pray, and then therefore I'm supposed to be able to deal with the world and angle it, wrestle it, because my God is that great. That's what we are taught, many of us. We believe that, you know, therefore we can be these monolithic beings that basically can deal with anything. Couple that with the fact that in this country I am alone. I don't have I don't have that auntie I can go to, whose house I can go to if I'm struggling with something. You see what I'm saying? I don't have those people who are cold blood, who are my support system. You see what I'm saying? So I start relying on me. But to be honest, unbeknown to everybody, even before then, from the age of when I left home, I had already built myself, I'm going to stand on my own 2 feet. Because even at home, the support didn't feel like it was there. You know what I'm saying? When you realize that...
So it comes from somewhere
deep. That's the thing. I think it comes from somewhere deep. I think our upbringing, like Fusion of Culture is saying, our upbringing plays a lot in terms of how we are. We view ourselves. Let me tell you, bro, I never thought I had anything within me that was worth of note. You know, like that lack of self-worth, which many of us will use other things to try and prop ourselves up to become that thing that think you become noticeable.
It's put on the front.
Yes. We put on the front from an early age. Let me tell you my sense, for me personally, my sense of self-worth.
Is that like a defensive mechanism?
Yeah, for sure. It is.
But do you think it gets to a point where then when you break down, it's very hard to come back again?
I know. I know, bro. Hey, let me tell you. That's why for me, I think my journey is there. I am on a journey. It's not like I actually got to a point where I'm fine. Because many of us, we think one day we will be able to say, I am fine. I know I am not fine.
I mean, there's a saying that you only rest when you've gotten six feet down.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
That's the rest that will take away all the pain and suffering.
Yes.
Okay. But we don't want that. Okay?
No, we don't want that. Let me tell you.
We just want to still function.
Yeah, we want to function. Many of us are functional something.
No, we are dysfunctional.
Functional.
Yeah.
We are dysfunctionally functional.
Yes, but not in the sense that, yeah, you see me every morning smiling.
Yes.
Or you see me now and then when we bump into each other. And
we mask,
that
bro.
Smile, yeah.
Sometimes
it's covering
mask.
A lot of pain.
Oh, bro.
You understand? So there's so much pain. I read somewhere, forgot the title of the book, where I think it was a former civil rights person who was describing the state of the black man.
Yeah.
And he described it as, he put it in percentages. He said 90% is full of pain.
Yeah.
Okay. And he divided the 10% into two, like, basically, we are functioning on 5%.
Bro, we are struggling.
We are functioning on 5%.
But that's it. You know what? I'm saying? I think sometimes it's like this. Because remember, we are not only putting on a face, right, for starters. And because if we don't, people think people will view us some type of way. I remember, you know, our first episode of the Trims and Talk podcast. One of the questions we used to ask every guest is, when is the last time you cried? I remember actually we recorded our first preliminary sort of like sound bites at Fade's barbershop here in Sheffield. Bunch of men in the barbershop. We asked the question, when is the last time you cried? And you heard all manner of excuses. Ah, no, me, man, I don't cry. Ah. The last time I cried must have been two years ago. And then somebody will recall why it was the way it was. And then somebody said something which I thought was interesting. It was this brother Paul. Paul said, sometimes as men we feel like we need to be given permission to express the thing.
The emotions.
You see what I'm saying? When we were children, we cried all the time. At the drop of a hat, we cried until somebody said, I'll give you something to cry about. You see what I'm saying? So we were stopped. And then somebody told us, men don't cry. You are not man enough because
you cried
or you expressed your emotions. You see what I'm saying? So we further broke. So we stiffened ourselves as men to a point that even sometimes when you tense yourself so much that you actually break something within you to maintain that tenseness. Because I think sometimes there has to come a point where you are unfeeling.
Insensitive.
This is the thing. I was saying to someone, I was talking to my, at home. No, I can't remember, but I was saying, sometimes I don't have reference to certain emotions simply because, you know, like sometimes when you convince yourself that you don't feel that emotion to a point that when it manifests itself, you don't know how to deal with it. You see what I'm saying? So references to, I mean, today is what? Is Valentine's for many. Come on, you can't forget about Valentine. Now, this is the thing.
I don't celebrate it, that's why.
You don't celebrate Valentine's. Well, there are many men who don't do that. Because you get that excuse.
The last time you bought your wife flowers?
Dude, it's not about me here. We're talking about mental health, man. Now it's like,
I just have to throw it out on it.
No, this is the thing, bro. I think There are certain things we don't normalize as men. I think there are certain behaviors we don't normalize to a point that they become the natural thing. I was trying to explain to somebody this morning why I struggle with the whole flowers thing. And I was saying, you know, I struggle with flowers because they will wither within a day or so. And so I've always been a practical person. And because I don't have the resources to do the thing, on a regular basis.
It doesn't have to be on regular basis.
That's what I'm saying. But the point I'm trying to make is every penny that I save counts. It has. So sometimes it's like you want to buy, you'd rather pay like $1,000 on a microphone because you know it won't break as quickly as the 20-pound one. Even though sometimes you get the 20-pound one and it lasts forever.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Mm. But I think as for me, because I come from a background where I didn't have much. I didn't have anything. You see what I'm saying? So everything.
Those are the lessons, perhaps.
That's what I'm saying. So
and they are so ingrained in you.
Yeah.
Know? But if we come back thinking about, yes, the lessons from childhood.
Yes.
They shape us to be who we are.
That's the thing, bro.
When we grow up, you could have had a plain sailing soft childhood growing up.
Yeah.
Maybe up until to a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
And then life hit you hard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Life is a way. It's the greatest teacher, man.
Absolutely. And then,
very harsh, too.
And then there is another element where someone else grows from rough childhood, comes an adult, still hard life, bro. Okay?
Yeah.
Up until to the extent when the Lord takes away their life.
Yes.
These people, basically, they've never had a day of joy. Nice. They masked, they laughed, they smiled, you know. They brought families in this world.
That's it.
But there was never a joyful thing.
There was never a joyful thing. So everything becomes, it becomes, I'll say everything is like an obligation. You're obligated to do the thing that you do.
So I think last time when we had a chat, we talked about access to resources, okay? What the challenge do people like us face when trying to access mental health support, okay?
Yeah.
I talked about therapists.
Yeah, yeah.
We talked about counselors.
Because, yeah,
you know my position. I won't repeat my position.
say cultural specific or culturally sensitive.
Well,
therapist.
What support systems should we have to overcome these issues? If I tell our listeners, there's psychotherapy.
Oh yeah, there is psychotherapists.
Counseling is
counselors
there.
And stuff. Yeah.
But do we have anything which is culturally appropriate for us as a people? We do not want, well, I don't want, we don't want, but I, maybe, why don't we invite a psychotherapist one day?
Yeah, we're going to, I have many, I know.
If you have any, please, do invite one because I'm struggling myself to understand the principles of psychotherapy, whether they're universal or they're personal tailored, okay? Or could there be some cultural appropriate perspectives added to it to basically build up? You know, we're all unique in our own situations,
We are unique.
Your situation is different from my situation.
That's it.
But I want, when I'm facing that person in front of me, that I'm going to tell all my life, and everything about me.
Yeah.
I want them also to have an understanding of the place that I'm coming from, the place that I'm speaking from. Do you understand?
This is the thing I don't really understand about us as a people. Considering, I mean, like, if you know those who came to this part of the world, many of us came here as health practitioners. But I think it seems like the only route that we followed was nursing.
Yeah.
Or care work.
Yes.
You never found people who thought that, you know, the health of the mind was important. I think in our parts of the world.
Our part of the world.
Yeah.
It is just, I don't want to call it an imagination, but it's something which is misunderstood.
Yeah.
Mental health, from the African perspective, people don't understand it.
They think it's witchcraft. And
there's witchcraft, there's juju, there's wobea, there's, you know.
Yeah.
So basically, there's voodoo.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the spiritual practices, you know, the African spirituality. People still practice this.
Yeah.
I remember, I don't know if you remember back in the days, like late 90s, early 2000s. I used to look at newspapers, There used to be a page somewhere in the newspaper, you know, the advert page.
Yeah.
Yeah. With people offering services to, do you understand?
Dispel evil spirits.
Oh, yes. Thank you. You know, dispel evil spirits.
Yeah.
If you have any financial issues, marital problems, you could ring that number.
Let me tell you, bro. I will not.
I get that. But I'm just.
I know what you mean. I know where you're coming from. No, it's true. Because let me tell you. I mean, let me tell you. My country. I mean, like, actually, the first time I saw this at a larger scale, I remember somebody brought in this leaflet from South Africa. Because you know, when you're in Zimbabwe, you get a lot of stuff from South Africa. And there was like this pamphlet, which basically was like some services that were being offered in South Africa pertaining to everything from getting a potential mate to getting, you know, like some favor with your boss.
Yes,
you know, there is some medicine, some traditional medicine pertaining to that thing. So if you suddenly went to somebody and told them that, you know, I have a problem with my mental health, naturally people will go off to some herb or something.
Yes.
But this is the thing. I think, I'm not saying that, you know, that whole spiritual outlook is wrong or whatever. I don't have an opinion because I don't have experience except what I have observed. And I don't practice that kind of something because my belief system is different.
Yeah, but you know what? And I had a brother, you know, we're just having a laugh and chatting and said, oh, his dad, you know, goes back home, you know, during summertime and, you know.
Yeah.
And he used to say, oh, you know what? Oh, dad is going back home. And I said, okay, holidays. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But he said, no. He's got something called Matobo Hills.
That's in Zimbabwe,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
I said, what takes place in Matobo Hills?
Yeah.
Something in Jelele or in
Jelele? Yeah, in Jelele, yeah.
Yeah, you see?
Yeah. Ah, dude, we grew up with that.
So I'm thinking,
grew up with that, bro.
It's good, Jelele, you know, Matobo.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, what happens there? He said, oh, listen, there are other helpers up there.
Bro.
We still have people in our communities that still think, when I'm so stressed out and I take my flight, get home, have a 2-day rest, drive to Njelele or Matobo, something's going to make me feel better when I go there.
Let me ask you a question then. You know, like our sort of like Muslim brothers and sisters, they go to Mecca every so often. Or they go for the pilgrimage. Isn't this something akin to that? I know some people go to Israel. You know, some Christians will go to Israel and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So, And some of us will go on holiday to Ibiza.
Yes.
See what I'm saying? Or some will go to Holland, because Amsterdam.
Yes.
And get some baked goods and you know what I'm saying? So I think when it comes to our mental health, the thing that we do to alleviate that, that's what we will do. Some people will question our process for how we do the thing. So let me tell you, within Jelele thing, many of us believe that it was this holy place for many. Because even when we had drought, and I remember this distinctly, I was in grade school, like early grade school. There was drought in Zimbabwe, and the whole country was encouraged to, we sang for rain, bro. People prayed for rain.
They danced?
People danced. Yeah. Some people went even far. They went to Njelele and all those places, you know, for, you know what I'm saying? Mm. I will never, in even sometimes when certain things are laughable, I will never really, I'll probably smile and think, because I think the human psyche is we go for the comfortable, we go for the familiar.
The easier pathways.
Because many of us, we will talk to each other about that thing that helped us with our process until, and then they will say, oh yeah, try it. You know how it is. Mm-hmm. You know how some of us were basically even like, we were coerced into trying that illicit thing for the first time.
Oh yes.
So peer pressure, so to speak. That's one other thing that I thought I didn't get to mention about, you know, why, when it comes to the reasons why, you know, we are the way we are pertaining to our mental health. Sometimes when you are around people who are strong-minded and say, I can deal with stuff, sometimes you just want to present as doing right, as doing good.
If you go along that bandwagon,
yes,
what happens? You drop off that wagon.
You do, bro.
And when you drop off, you can't catch up.
No, you can't catch up.
You can't catch up.
That's the thing.
And now, this is where the struggle
comes.
We are in an environment which is not conducive for our wellness.
No.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yet, we think we can roll in the wagon with the rest.
Yeah.
When, you know, you cannot really measure your strength, your resilience against someone else's. We're all unique individuals. You know, we all have different strengths and weaknesses and all sorts.
That's it.
And this is where it comes to something we previously talked about, you know, our historical traumas. Our situations that we have been misunderstood for, you know, years and years and years, you know.
For eons, bro.
And if we men talk about us, okay, now imagine what our sisters would talk about. You know, they've been the most misunderstood human beings on planet Earth. I'm telling you, a black woman?
Dude, let me.
Absolutely misunderstood.
Let me throw something at you, bro. I think sometimes, you know, it's, you know, like I was at a I was privy to a conversation. I was filming this conference recently. It was a networking event at Imosi, you know, Ellesmere, and they were talking about, you know, like somebody gave a presentation about the infant mortality, and they also spoke about women who die in childbirth.
Childbirth, yeah.
And they spoke about black women who die at childbirth. And they ascribe that to the fact that, you know, historically, the misconceptions you were asking about, some of the misconceptions that the wider world has about us, the very fact that they think our women can take more pain than
others,
than their
counterparts.
Their Caucasian brothers and sisters. Mm. You see, they say we can take more pain. And us, because if you look at it, it's all enshrouded in the whole, in the slavery complex.
But there was an experiment which was carried out. You know that experiment.
So they think that we can take more pain than the normal person. But this is the thing. I think sometimes in our thing, in our manliness, in trying to present that strong male,
put a front.
Yeah, we made things more difficult for us, because instead of crying out and telling people that you are hurting me.
But crying, as you earlier on, we talked about crying as men.
Yeah. But who told you that men can't cry?
No. That's the thing. I'm not saying men can't cry.
Yeah.
But we cry. I remember one time I bust.
Mm-hmm.
Something clicked in my head.
Mm.
And I just bust.
Mm.
Like a baby, literally.
Yeah.
Like a baby. And when I did, I felt this weight off my shoulders.
That's it, bro.
But the thing is, can cry, can your tears or my tears turn any situation around to whoever might see you as you, Lou, or me, right? If they turn us, oh, Lou looks very sad. Mm-hmm. Lou's been crying, man. Mm-hmm. I've seen Lou crying. Yeah? When they see your tears, what is the impact of those? Is it your tears? Or is... Remember, we are misunderstood.
Yeah.
Okay?
But that's exactly...
Bro, yeah. If you're just walking down the street and bust out crying...
Yeah.
Someone's going to call police.
Well, that's the thing.
He's not well.
That's how many of us were sectioned.
He's not well.
Because of that, yeah.
He's crying. He's not well, okay? Yeah. By the time these people come, the ambulance comes, are you all right? So... Even you to be able to explain your situation,
mm-hmm.
you'll be misunderstood.
But that's the thing. I think, let me tell you, bro, one thing I'm learning in my old age, it's my birthday soon, you know. I mean, like, I've been telling people, you know, like, 19th of February is my birthday.
Bakers out there, you've been told.
Yeah, like, you know, like, you've been told, you know, like, you
very
know.
Very nice fruitcake.
Fruitcake.
You're not asking for much.
Let me tell you, I'm vegetarian, so I don't ask any
luxury
plants.
Cakes.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah, fruitcakes, you know, will be fine.
So, what was I talking about? We're talking about
crying.
Which part of cry?
We were talking about...
Old age.
Yes, old age.
Old age. Let me tell you. I think, I mean, like, to try and kind of round this thing up without going into the bushes, I think we really do. I think as men, we need to normalize certain emotions. And that's how we teach our children. We teach our children that as much as you want to cry, you want to dispel that. Yeah, this is what I wanted to allude to. Tears can clear your sight.
100%.
You see what I'm saying? Sometimes a good cry can clear your sight, because suddenly you realize that when it's like after a good cry, things suddenly become clearer. And you're like, yeah. But because we don't allow ourselves to feel certain emotions, that's why many of us become stunted in terms of our growth. And I think there's nothing wrong with crying. And I'll say I permit my children to do so.
That's absolutely fantastic. Is good.
Because we were not permitted by our parents. Our parents, I'll give you something to cry about. You know what I'm saying? And that basically stopped
us. And they'll put you off crying for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Now, to all I understand, our dear listeners, as we come into a close, this conversation are very deep. And anyone out there that has an opinion, that has an idea, that resonates with what we are talking about, you know, this is our platform, this is our safe space to offload. But also, being able to understand that we all have mental health, we are all men as work in progress, you know, we're dysfunctional but fully functional same time. So bear with us. If there's anybody that's been touched by this conversation tonight, please do get in touch. We're more than happy to have you. Until next time, Lou, thank you for coming, my brother.
Oh, thank you, bro. It's always a pleasure, you know, to have these conversations.
We're back on Sunday, you know that.
Oh, yeah, we're back on Sunday. I mean, we're on Sheffield Live or...
African Voices, Sheffield Live.
African Voices. Oh, yes.
Yes.
We're back here on Sheffield Live, African Voices, on Sunday at 11 a.m.
11 a.m., so tune in.
So please tune in.
Thank
you. Probably have some others.
Yeah, some hard-hitting topics. We're out.